Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Up in about 15 minutes, I'll give you guys my NFL thought for the day. Appreciate you listening and making me a part of your day. Someone on the text line actually asked a really, really good question. I do want to answer that before this segment is over. We're still using the old text line for the next couple of days, so if you want to interact with the show, you can do so. 913-586-7610. I want to remind you guys that we have brought back Survivor League. So you guys remember, last year, we did Survivor League. You need to email 965thedrive@gmail.com. 965thedrive@gmail.com. When you do that, you will get an automatic bounce back. We have set up Survivor. All you need to do, sign up, log in, take care of your personal business. We got $1,000 worth of prizes. $500 in gift cards to first place, $300 to second place, $100 to third, fourth and fifth. We're going to give you $50. You can't get the drinks on us, but we'll take care of the entree. I think that's more than fair. Hey, if you want some dessert for you and your lady, you got to take care of that yourself. We're not getting the dessert for you. We got your entree. You can't get the whole bottle of champagne on us. Now, if you win, you can take your friends out to eat. $500 if you win this thing. Rob, you can feed a lot of people at the other place on $500. You guys can have a time at the other place for $500. If you come in fourth or fifth, you didn't win nothing. Better take that $50 and be happy. Go get you an 8-piece. That's all you get if you come in fourth or fifth place in our league. So 965thedrive@gmail.com. Go ahead and sign up for Survivor. We appreciate you guys listening and me bar the show and making the switch with us over to 96.5 The Fan. Let me give you a couple more things that I'm going to be looking for in this preseason game tomorrow against the Lions. So I already gave you Carson Steele. Carson Steele got 4 carries in the last game. I would like to see Carson Steele get closer to 8 to 10 carries in this game and give him more of a prolonged shot. Give him more of an opportunity. Let's see what he can do. In his 4 carries in the last game, one of them went for over 20 yards. So I want to see a little bit more. It's clear that you guys like him. There's going to be no Clyde Edwards-Helaire in this game. He did not practice all week. No chance he plays in this game. Go ahead and give the undrafted rookie, go ahead and give him more of a shot. The next thing that I'm going to be looking for, we know what the wide receiver room is going to be at the top. You still have 4 guys fighting for one spot between Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, Nico Remigio, and Justin Ross. So you have 4 guys, I think, maybe fighting for one. Maybe you got 2 spots on the back end. I think that Justin Ross deserves one of those spots. I think he has had the best camp out of those 4 guys. Nico was not good in his last game. Kadarius Toney has battled injuries. Sky Moore has been inconsistent. This is another opportunity, or maybe the opportunity, for Justin Ross. Go make the team this weekend. Have 4 catches. Have 3 catches. Do something dazzling in this game and leave no doubt. I deserve to be on this 53-man roster. So I'm going to be looking at that wide receiver battle and seeing out of those other guys. Now with no Hollywood Brown for week 1, somebody's getting the call up. Somebody's next up for that opportunity. Is that going to be Mecole Hardman? Can that be Justin Ross? Could it be Nico? Could it be one of these other guys? That obviously remains to be seen. But in this second preseason game, which this is the last preseason game for the Chiefs, I know they have a third one. Ain't nobody playing that matters in that third one. Mahomes is not playing. Kelce is not playing. Jones is not playing. If you own their jersey, they are not playing next Thursday's preseason game. So go out there, ball out, give yourself an opportunity. It's also going to be interesting to see who runs with the ones in this game. If you're playing the fourth quarter of this, it's obviously not the worst thing that can happen, but if you get an opportunity to play when Mahomes is in the game, then I think that really says a lot about obviously how they feel about you into this. So a couple of things that I'm looking for: Carson Steele's usage, also that wide receiver room. What does that look like in this game? We'll continue to see what the rotation is in the secondary. I really liked Hicks. I thought Hicks played really, really well in their last preseason game. So he was really cool to be able to see. Also want to see a little bit more work from the tight ends that you got. You got Jared Wiley, the rookie tight end out of TCU. Does he get more of an opportunity in this game? There's probably about 5 to 6 guys, Rob, that I kind of have my eye on heading into this game. This is the real last extended look for some of these guys. What do you do? Are you either on a roster bubble? Are you making a spot? Or are you a young player that these are valuable snaps that if an injury happens at some point, are you ready to step in and fill in that role?
I'm surprised you didn't mention any of the cornerbacks, because we talked about it yesterday that it seems like Chiefs fans, you know, 3, 4, 5 months ago felt like L'Jarius Sneed is one of the best corners in the NFL. Should have been an all-pro. He got robbed. He's a top-5 guy. And now he's gone, and Chiefs fans are like, ho-hum, we'll be fine. Joshua Williams, Nazee Johnson, Jalen Watson, I know, has been battling injury, but Jamari Connor, as Mitch Holtis pointed out yesterday on the show, that grouping is going to be facing the Lions starters for an extended time. You mentioned it being the last preseason game, essentially, because no one plays in the third one. I'm surprised some of the things you're watching are not starter situations. I know the Chiefs' depth chart is relatively solid, but I'd like to see Joshua Williams play well. I'd like to see Nazee Johnson play well in a game against Amon-Ra St. Brown or a player of that magnitude. I'm all for Justin Ross. I'm all for Nico Remigio. I'm all for those guys. Those are roster bubble fights, and they're interesting. But I think those really get highlighted in game 3 when they get a multitude of snaps. I'm looking for how the starters perform, because there are, albeit small handful, a handful of questions with the Chiefs starters, and I want to see how they hold up against a Super Bowl caliber team in the Lions. I know that's counterintuitive to say.
They might be the best team in the NFC.
They might be the best team in the NFC. So
certainly with the uncertainty around San Francisco.
I want to see how a McDuffie handles Amon-Ra St. Brown, because in the past it was like, go get him, Sneed. That's not the case anymore. So I'm more watching the starters in the corners than I am those roster bowl guys. I'm surprised for a guy who pointed out the corner, may not concerns right term, but question marks, why that wasn't on your list.
Someone on the text line says, CDOT, it must be a new station, because 610 CDOT would never hype up Justin Ross like this. I told you guys, usually what happens is I get labeled the hater because I'm trying to recorrect some of the fan excitement and hype that you guys have. You guys normally go on the deep end when you start to like somebody, and then I'm the one like, hey, that's not really realistic, and then I get called the hater. I get called the hater. I'm not a hater. I was never anti-Justin Ross the last time. I just wanted you guys to keep in mind that he hadn't played football in 2 years and he had significant surgery. But they put a couple of videos up on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, and y'all was going crazy last year for Justin Ross. Now that you guys have realistic expectations for Justin Ross, we are all on the same page. So last year, I know it sounded like I came off really harsh on Justin Ross, and I promise you I wasn't. There was no reason to be. He was an undrafted wide receiver. How hard can you be on that player? I usually push back on the hype. That's usually insane. But I've told you guys this all offseason. This is the most realistic you guys have been coming into a Chiefs year. We all feel the same about this team. All of us think they are good. They're the best team in the AFC. They got a chance to win another Super Bowl. We all like the same players on this team. It kind of makes me uncomfortable. Don't worry. Once they start playing games, I'm sure we will be on the opposite sides. But we have had a lot of fan harmony on this show over the last couple of weeks. I don't know what's going on. Again, I don't know how to respond when we're all on the same page. I like it more when we're on opposite sides of things. But it'll be okay. You know, I'm going to pick the Chiefs to lose a game at some point, and then I'll be the worst human being ever. I mean, you know, that's the balance that we have on this show. But right now, it's peace. It's calm. Everybody is asleep. Everybody ate, had a good meal. The house is clean. I already turned the kitchen light off. Everything is good right now. I want to enjoy this for as long as you guys will let me enjoy it, because I know that eventually it's not going to be this way. Text line 913-586-7610. We're still using the old text line for a couple more days. Someone asked this question. CDOT, the Falcons just signed Justin Simmons. They also have Jesse Bates as the other safety. They both give Mahomes problems. Do you think the Atlanta game is a trap game? Yes. I absolutely do. If you're asking me right now, I think I might pick Atlanta to win that game. Now, I don't want to get ahead of myself. Let me see what the Atlanta Falcons look like. But that is absolutely a game that you should be worried about. It's Sunday night football. You don't need to win the game because it's a team in the NFC. That crowd is going to be rocking in Atlanta. That could be their, hey, the Falcons might be a little bit better than we think game. I would be a little bit worried heading into that. Now, it sounds easy to say because it's the road game. I'm more worried about that than the two games that they have against Baltimore and Cincinnati, even though I think Baltimore and Cincinnati are better teams than Atlanta. You got the home opponent standpoint of it. You have more time to prepare for those teams, so you don't have the quick turnaround that you could have, the road component. Yeah, I would absolutely be worried about the Atlanta game. The Chiefs probably have, what, 4 or 5 losses over the course of the season? They don't have too many more than that. That Falcons game is one that you have to give the Chiefs the advantage. They have the advantage in every game. But, Rob, heading into that game, Chiefs are probably 2.5, maybe 3.5 point favorites on the road. They're not going to be much bigger than that if Atlanta is what we think they can be. If you're a 2.5 point road favorite, those teams lose every single week in the NFL. So I don't know if it's a trap game, because I think most people expect Atlanta to be a decent team and potentially win their division. But I certainly think it's going to be a well-played, tightly contested game that can go either way. I think Atlanta has a chance to win double-digit games and win their division. I don't want to use the term sleeper for them, but could they be the 3 seed in the NFC and be a dangerous team that, depending on what the matchups, could they make a little bit of a run if everything falls together? I mean, I think they're going to be able to score this year. Is their defense going to be good enough? I absolutely think that Chiefs-Atlanta game is that's one of the more intriguing games on their schedule.
I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. I think that's one of the more intriguing games. But we didn't even mention Matthew Judon is now a member of the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, like, they got him too.
Simmons and those guys. Matthew Judon is a great pass rusher when healthy. But I don't think you can consider a game against a division opponent, a division favorite, a trap. Like, do you think when they take on the Saints, it could be a trap? Because no one views the Saints as high. That's how I view a trap game. I don't think you'd be like, man, this playoff team we're going up against on the road, Sunday night football, massive implications. That doesn't feel like a trap game to me. A trap game to me is the first noon game of the year is at home against Denver. They're in 325, 725, Thursday night. There are national TV-a-palooza. And then in November, they get noon against the Broncos. That feels like the trap because the letdown factor. The Broncos might be spicier than we think. But I don't think division presumptive favorite is a trap game.
So then by your metric, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, it sounds like the only true trap game, because I'm not sure if you can put a division game as a trap game, the only trap game would then be the Monday night game against Tampa Bay. They play on the road against Vegas. They then have a home game against the Broncos. So two divisional games. I mean, they have a stretch there where it's San Francisco, Vegas, Denver, Buffalo, and then they just play Tampa Bay right there randomly in the middle of them. Wouldn't that be the definition of the trap game? I agree with you on Atlanta. Going on the road to play Atlanta on Sunday Night Football for your first road game, how can that be a trap game per se? But I think the argument would be it is sandwiched in between Cincinnati and on the road against Los Angeles. That would probably be it. I just think that usually there's that one game that the Chiefs lose that we look back and think, oh, that didn't really hurt them. That didn't really mean that much. They lost to a team in the NFC early in the season. That's not a crippling loss by any means. It has no bearing on tiebreakers that you're going to need. Like, if you're going to lose one of the first 4 games of the season, you would pick the at Atlanta game. The other 3 you have is Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Los Angeles. You would absolutely pick the on the road against Atlanta game. I mean, they have 5 games before the bye. The last one is home Monday night against the Saints. You aren't picking the Monday night game that you're going to be at. So if there is one game that you think they can afford to lose before they enter their bye week into week 6, you would pick the third game of the season on the road against the Atlanta Falcons. Coming up on the other side, let's keep talking NFL. I give you guys my NFL thought for the day. We're also going to be joined by Josh Vernier coming up in the 3 o'clock hour as well. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5 The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Counting down the 100 days until the Chiefs' title defense begins at Arrowhead.
Harrison Butker set to kick it off. The run-up. Butker's kick and Super Bowl 58 is underway in a high, deep spinning kick.
Every day at 3:15 on The Drive.
Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. I love the text line when the text line is arguing that the Saints are going to win in Arrowhead. I don't know what's been going on with the text line here over the last couple of days. It has certainly become a bizarro world. On the text line, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if Mercury is in retrograde. I don't know what is going on right now. But when the text line is making compelling arguments for the Saints to win Monday Night Football in Arrowhead against a two-time defending, I remember back when Derek Carr, y'all thought he was a bum. Now he's coming into Arrowhead to win. I don't know what is going on these last couple of days. I really don't. All right, speaking of quarterbacks, let me give you two NFL thoughts before we move on, and Vern's going to be on the show here coming up in a bit. First thought. I kind of caught the preseason bug yesterday. I spent my evening, you guys are going to laugh. I spent my evening yesterday watching preseason football and WNBA action and was really into both. I watched a lot of Drake May yesterday. A lot of the Patriots yesterday for whatever reason. And you know what I came away with? Hey man, Drake May might be all right. He might be all right. I was feverishly looking on the FanDuel app trying to figure out what his rushing touchdown total was going to be so I can bet the over. I think he is going to be way more mobile than people think he is going to be, and they are going to have way more design quarterback keepers and runs for him to use his athleticism and get on the outside. I came away thinking, hey, man, this Drake May guy might be a little better than I thought he was. I'm falling for it a little bit. Now, they haven't given him anybody to throw the football to. If your number one receiver is Kendrick Bourne, it's going to be some scary hours for you in the fall. But I was impressed by what I saw yesterday with Drake May. So I sometimes drink the preseason Kool-Aid, too. I'm a fan just like you guys. I was drinking the Kool-Aid yesterday on Drake May. And then the coach came out, Jared Mayo, and he's like, oh, well, the quarterback competition isn't over, bro. Are you seeing what I'm seeing? Because I don't know how you can see what Drake May has done in his first two preseason games and then start a washed up veteran QB behind him that is going nowhere. If you don't start Drake May now, you're going to do it week three, week four, when you lose three of those first four games anyway, and everybody in Boston is telling you to put in the young guy. Just do that from the very beginning. We do this all the time with these young quarterbacks. You're either going to swim or you're going to drown. But you can't hide them. Eventually, we eventually got to see Trey Lance start in the NFL. And we came to the conclusion he really ain't that good. We saw Justin Herbert start way sooner than people thought he was going to start. He turned out to be a good NFL quarterback. Baker Mayfield started eventually. You cannot hide these guys. Just throw them out there. Maybe you have to make the playbook a little bit more simplistic. to terminology that he can understand. But the best thing for your organization on the top three pick that you've spent is to throw the young guy out there in Drake May and see what he can do. I was happy.
Real quick, didn't the Chiefs hide Patrick Mahomes for 15 games? Isn't that what teams are trying to do? Hey, throw it out there. You can't hide these guys forever. You mentioned Baker Mayfield. You mentioned all these players. The Chiefs were able to hide their quarterback, who, by the way, is better than any of those other players you mentioned. They hit him for 15 of a 16-game season. And let's remember, the only reason he played in Game 16 is they had iced it down. If Game 16 mattered, Patrick Mahomes would have been a clipboard holder for a year.
I agree. Now, the Chiefs had a very unique situation, but now that we have seen Patrick Mahomes, I'm not going to say that that year off didn't help him, but Patrick Mahomes might be the best quarterback that we've ever seen before. Something tells me if you had put Patrick Mahomes out there as a rookie, he would have started to figure things out. You remember he sat down with LeBron on the shop and said, I don't even know how to read defenses. This was in year two of his NFL career. He seemed to figure things out pretty quick. Some guys you just know. You and I watch a lot of NBA. It didn't take me a whole lot of time to realize, hey, LeBron different. In baseball, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, you know. Paul Skeens, he's good. From day one, he figured it out. Now, some guys are going to take a little bit longer to figure it out. Peyton Manning was not great his rookie year. He eventually turned into, I don't know, Peyton Manning. If you got him, then play him. And he will learn things on the fly. You're going to make mistakes. That's part of what you're doing when something is new. But the great ones eventually adjust and figure it out and go on to be great. And the ones that were never going to be great, they eventually get cast aside and you start over. That is just competition at this level. Last thing here, and I hate to have this opinion because I love Colin Kaepernick. I really do. But, bro, I'm so tired of these stories that pop up at every year in August. We get some kind of news report or story or something that Colin's still interested in playing and Colin wants to come back, bruh. The last time you played was 2016. It's 2024. Free us from this story. You're done. Rob, how old do you think Colin Kaepernick is?
He's like 37, right?
He's 36 years old. Colin. No. Now, I don't know if you actually talked to somebody or somebody just came up with the story to put you back in there because you know it generates topics and stories. And I don't know. But I'm telling you that there was a story very recently in a major publication. Colin's still working out every day. Colin still thinks he can play. Bro, if you don't go to the XFL and leave us alone, they got flag football coming to the Olympics in 4 years. Why don't you get ready for it? Why don't you be the Doug McDermott of the flag football team that's coming up for the United States and leave us alone? Stop it. I don't know what you're doing right now, but it's probably something great. Speaking to kids, being an inspiration, keep doing that. But please stay out of the NFL news cycle. Then there's a story right now that Harbaugh asked Kaepernick to come on to be a coach this year. Of course, Kaepernick doesn't want to be a coach. He doesn't want to do that, bro. What do you want to do? I'm tired of these stories. I really am. I know we have to do this every August. He pops back up, and we have to have this discussion, but I don't want to do it anymore. I really don't want to do it anymore. So the story is this. Shortly after Harbaugh was named the coach back in January, he reached out to Kaepernick to ask him if he wanted to be a coach. It wasn't the first time he's done it. I don't know what Kaepernick is doing. I don't know why he wouldn't want to come in and be an assistant and kind of work his way up. He certainly has an important message that I think a lot of current NFL players could relate to. Whatever it is, that is his journey. I'm not here to tell him what he needs to do. I don't want to hear these stories anymore about how you want to play. It's over. It's done. You had a great run. You got to play in a Super Bowl. You played in NFC Championship games. You sparked a lot of conversations. History will determine how they remember Colin Kaepernick. But the present day, not history, the present day is you are history. I don't want to have any more conversations about you potentially playing in the National Football League. My brother, it is over. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by Josh Vernier. He is getting ready for tonight's game between the Royals and the Reds. The Royals, with a couple game lead in the American League wild card, they got to get back on some winning ways. They got to get back going. They got to get back hot. They got three games against Cincinnati. They'll be back in town next week playing the Angels. I will actually be out at Kauffman Stadium. We're doing our show there on Monday and Tuesday if you guys want to stop by before you go into the stadium. So keep it right here. You're listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by our Royals insider. Josh Vernier joins us on the show today as we take a closer look at the Royals as they begin a three-game series against the Cincinnati Reds. Vern, how you doing, man?
I'm terrific. How are you?
Vern, I'm doing great. What does it feel to – I mean, at one point you were the Royals insider for 610 Sports Radio. Now you're the Royals insider for 96.5 The Fan. That has to be a point of pride for you, Vern.
Yeah, I mean, it's life-changing. I want to thank, I'm guessing, Bobby and Patrick Mahomes.
They did this.
I'm guessing those are the people that we thank. I'm not sure.
No, they did this. No, 100%. Specter deserves no credit for it. Rob, you know, Rob got a little promotion now, so he was looking at me, you know, earlier today. He said, I told you. I'm like, oh, who are you talking to? He was like, I'm your superior here. I'm like, I don't know what Rob started talking to me like this, Vern.
He has been walking around with a crown lately.
Yeah, I don't know what's gotten into. I don't know what's gotten into our guy, Rob Britton, man. But no, we're happy to have you here, man. Let's talk about this. So early in the week, I spent a lot of time playing your cut. You went on the morning show and said, people are focused on the third wild card. I'm focused on the division. I guess very simple for me, Vern. If this team can't beat Minnesota and you can't pass second place, then it's not realistic yet to start to have those division conversations. You got to take care of business of the team that is directly in front of you. They had that opportunity early in this week and they squandered it.
Sure, but you're not chasing Minnesota. You're chasing Cleveland, and you have seven opportunities against the Guardians starting in about a week and a half. Handle your business there, and yeah, you might need to hope that someone helps out on the Minnesota front, but it's hard to just completely dominate the division. And you know, as I laid out, they've dominated Chicago. They took care of Detroit. They've handled their business against Cleveland. Yes, Minnesota, no doubt, has gotten the better of them, but to me, to look at the third wild card race right now with 41 games to play, that there's just so much that can happen. To me, I'm dead focused on that division. Now, you bring up Minnesota. We could talk about that third wild card race with Boston. The bottom line is this: either this rotation is elite, or it isn't. If it's elite, this team's going to the playoffs. If you don't believe that Seth Lugo and the guy that we saw him perform to over the first half of the season, if you don't believe that Brady Singer's the guy that we've seen over the first three quarters of the season, well then, that's the focus to me. Is this rotation? That's going to be the reason why this team wins the division, why this team grabs a wild card spot, or why this team falls just short in what's still going to be a historic turnaround. I hate to put it all on their shoulders, because going back to spring training, there was no way that I thought this rotation would be elite and would be good enough to put the team on their back and carry them to October. I thought that they would be good. I thought they'd be top half of Major League Baseball, but now I never expected top five in the sport. And you know, here we are, 41 to play, and they're still top five in the sport if you're looking at ERA and innings pitched. They're answering the bell pretty regularly, but of late, Seth Lugo, not so much. Brady Singer, not so much. Yes, Michael Wacha's held it down for about 3 months now. Cole Reagans, who you spoke with earlier, is the ace of this staff and one of the two, three best lefties in the sport, probably one of the five best pitchers in the sport. So Those are the guys that are going to get you there. Those are the guys that are going to beat Cleveland. That's really the focus. It's not, do you believe the Royals are going to make the playoffs? It's, do you believe this rotation is elite and will be elite down the stretch? If the answer is yes, then there's nothing to worry about. They'll be there in October.
Rob, the first thing he told me when he got back from vacation was he thought that Seth Lugo was starting to hit a ceiling just because of usage and innings pitched. He has not been sharp his last four or five appearances out there. Is that what you're noticing with Seth Lugo?
Certainly his most recent outing. You know, even the, you know, the Boston outing in Boston, not sharp there either. But really the question is this a blip on the radar? Because I feel silly giving that built-in excuse of, oh, you know, reaching your innings limit and you're wearing down the stretch. Everyone is. Everyone's tired. Everyone's grinding to 162. So I'm not going to give that to Seth Lugo. I'm not giving that to Brady Singer. They don't want it, right? Cole Reagans doesn't want that. What Seth Lugo wants is the ball. He wants to be the guy on the hill. He wants to lead. So, yeah, obviously, the last time we saw him, no good. As bad as he's been with the Kansas City Royals. That was the first time I've been concerned post-game with Seth Lugo, but we'll see what he does coming up over the next few weeks. I don't know how much I'm going to, you know, read into, you know, the opposition of the Cincinnati Reds offense, the opposition of the Angels offense, who is, you know, the team that Lugo will see next. But coming up with that 20-game stretch, that riptide, as I call it, we'll see pretty early on if Seth Lugo is fading down the stretch or just had a rough few weeks.
Vern, can the Royals make the postseason with the fading Seth Lugo?
No. No, they can't make the postseason without All-Star Seth Lugo, All-Star Cole Reagans, and MVP Bobby Witt Jr. All three of those guys need to do what they've done all season, and that is be great.
Right now, we're joined by Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, going through some of the top stories with the Kansas City Royals. I do have a question really quickly to go back a little bit, and then I want to go forward. With the Royals, they are 3-7 against Minnesota. They have three games left to finish out their 13 games against Minnesota. Why do you think, even though these two teams seem very, very similar to each other, a lot of the numbers, why do you think that Minnesota has had the clear advantage over the Royals?
It's strange, man. The defense in Minnesota in those seven games, as bad as they've been all year, you know, that series that just ended, that was, I think, the worst defensive sets, and you could throw in the homestand with Boston and St. Louis, the worst stretch of defense we've seen from these guys all year, the worst stretch since that four-game set in Minneapolis where they dropped 3 of 4. So, you know, can I attribute that to the Twins? I really can't. Yeah, the Royals defense, and sure, I'll tip my cap to, you know, Joe Ryan and Pablo Lopez. They're outstanding starting pitchers, and they outdueled Cole Reagans. Pablo Lopez outdueled Cole Reagans back on opening day. Joe Ryan got the best of the Royals before. Pablo got him again on this most recent series, and their bullpen is much better than the Royals bullpen. Their bullpen won them a game last night again against the Texas Rangers. No, the Twins are a good team. And unfortunately, in those games, one of the pillars of the Royals team, their defense, right there with the rotation, their defense let them down. And you could say in this most recent series against the Twins, both pillars let them down, the rotation and the defense. And this team's going nowhere without elite pitching and elite defense.
So there was a story earlier today on MLB Network that I want to get your thoughts on. It was on who the five faces of Major League Baseball was on. So this was the list. Paul Skenes was number 5. Bobby Witt Jr. was number 4. Bryce Harper was number 3. Shohei Ohtani 2. And Aaron Judge was 1. How do you feel about this list? And how cool is it to see Bobby Witt Jr. in this category with these obviously great names?
Yeah, really cool. The top three to me, no doubt about it. I think if Shohei's pitching, he's number 1, but no argument there. For as much as we want Mike Trout to be on that list, he doesn't want to be on that list, and his body of late is not allowing him to be on that list. Yeah, Bobby's next. You know, I think that spot that Bobby holds could be filled by quite a few names. I just know that Mark DeRosa, the guy that came up with that list, is as big of a Bobby Witt Jr. fan as there is on a national level right now. So, you know, number four to me could be Bobby. Should easily. I can make the case that it's Bobby. But a guy like, there are quite a few. Ellie De La Cruz, who we're going to watch this weekend. A guy like Gunnar Henderson in Baltimore. You know, if Julio Rodriguez could get his groove back at some point, maybe next season, he could fit in that number four spot. And then, yeah, Paul Skenes, what he's done coming out of, you know, 14 months ago, this dude's in the college World Series. Now he's, you know, dating a superstar, apparently. And, yeah. Paul Skenes is very well known for that next generation. And in a sport where you don't have many people that that next generation knows, Paul Skenes is one of them. So, yeah, you better pump that dude.
I really just want to see baseball take full advantage of the generation that they currently have. When you got Bobby Witt Jr., you got Skenes, you got Gunnar Henderson, you mentioned Ellie De La Cruz. I mean, there's probably 10 to 12 amazing baseball players right now that are under the age of 27. I think that baseball missed this past generation where they had Mike Trout, and some of that is just his own personality. You got a lot of different players from different backgrounds, different cultures, different upbringings. Man, baseball really has to take advantage of where they currently sit with how many great young superstars they have.
Yeah, but I'm sure you were saying that 5 years ago and 10 years ago.
That's
and
fair.
15 years ago, but I feel as if that's just where baseball is right now. I feel as if those fans that normally would latch on outside of Kansas City, that would, you know, normally latch on to a Bobby Witt Jr., they're now latching on to a Patrick Mahomes. To me, it, you know, baseball is the ultimate you know, provincial sport in that everyone in Kansas City loves the Royals. But I'd say a majority of Royals fans probably can't name two Washington Nationals or two Angels or, you know, three Orioles or, yeah, I just don't feel like when you flip on a game, you're watching baseball for your Royals taking on another team. You're not flipping on for Salvi or for Bobby. You're flipping on, yes, you love them, but you're flipping on, you know, your team. When it comes to the NFL, yeah, I'll watch Josh Allen and Joe Burrow go at it. I'll watch, you know, two rookie quarterbacks square off early on in the NFL season. I'm not watching two rookie pitchers, two rookie sluggers. I'm not watching two teams that I have, you know, no real feel for, no affiliation to. And that's where baseball is. It's you love your team, and some people, yourself included, are still dialed into what's going on outside of your city, but you're in the minority when it comes to that.
Right now, we're talking to Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, for a couple more minutes here. I got two rapid-fire, I guess, general baseball questions, and then I do want to get back to the Royals bullpen. The first question is about the Olympics. This is a no-brainer to me for Major League Baseball in terms of growing the sport. Baseball is probably a more international game than the NBA is. I just saw the NBA get 23 million people to watch the gold medal game between France. Now, maybe the United States wouldn't be in the gold medal game with how many great countries there are playing baseball, but this seems like a no-brainer once every 4 years to move the schedule around to play on a platform that baseball simply just doesn't have it this time.
Yeah, I'm with you. To me, the impediment is 162 freaking games. You and I have been talking about this for a very long time. The season is way too long. Just show up to your neighborhood big league ballpark on a Tuesday night. I don't, you know, there's maybe two, three cities where that place is packed. There's going to be, take your pick. What section do you want? How many tickets do you want? It's wide open. Yeah, cut the season down to, you know, 81 games, cut the season down to 100 games, and I think that would be a lot more plausible. But right now, if they're trying to cram in 81 home games for every team, and then you want to slide in the Olympics in between, I don't think that's feasible.
Have you seen this story about the potential change that baseball wants to implement where they want to have starting pitchers pitch at least six innings? I like this idea. I just think that baseball just needs to move back into a more an offensive era. You look at 20 years ago, I mean, batting average is down 20 points, strikeouts are way up, walks are down. It is just a far less offensive game. Some of that is starting pitching, some of that's velocity. There's a lot of different things for it. What did you think of that story? What do you think baseball needs to do to maybe maybe put some offense back into the game.
Yeah, I've become a fan of moving the mound back because it is velocity. Now this is a unique idea because, yeah, you know, tonight, Michael Lorenzen, if he's shaky in the fifth, he's coming out, and then the, you know, bottom half of that Cincinnati lineup is going to face, four different pitchers in their four trips to the dish, and I would imagine that a majority of them are sitting 95-plus with nasty, you know, breaking stuff. It's tough to hit when, you know, so many teams have the type of bullpens, you know, that they do, where it's just, even if the guy doesn't have great command, the stuff is obviously big league worthy. Moving the mound back, I think, is the best option that I've heard so far. If you want to bring the starting pitcher back, again, I know this isn't going to happen either, even though I like shortening the season. I also like shortening the game. I'd drop the game down to 7 innings. That's how you get starting pitchers back to being superstars when they pitch complete games. That doesn't happen anymore. That's a way to bring it back. That's also a way to move the game along even more.
All right, so speaking of pitching, let's get back to the Royals here. I want to ask your question about the bullpen. So on a scale from 1 to 10, 1 being not worried at all, 10 being DEFCON code red, how worried are you about their bullpen as we head into this riptide, we head into this stretch where I think you and I have seen enough Royals baseball to know every single night it is going to be a grind over those 20 games. Heading into the seventh inning, you're going to be up 5-3, down 4-3, 4-2. You're going to have to play complete games over that 3-week stretch. How worried are you about the bullpen?
Yeah, 1 to 10. It's obviously my number one worry. If there's something that's going to sink them in the riptide, it's obviously going to be the bullpen. So, man, I hate to do this, but I got to take a step back. And, you know, grand scheme of things, my goal has always been stay in contention into the month of September. Right, since May, I would say that's when my expectations started to change. And it was no longer just give us meaningful games in the second half. It became stay in the race until September. So that's still the expectation. I don't believe that the bullpen's bad enough to drag them out of the wild card race before we get to September. But as we get into September, I think the bullpen could be the culprit as to why you fall short of making the playoffs. So if we're talking, how worried are you when it comes to the Royals' postseason chances when it comes to this bullpen? Yeah, I'd say a 7.5.
This is where I give the Royals a little bit of benefit of the doubt, is certainly the manager. I don't know if the Royals have a lot of options that you trust at this point in the season. Right. Like, if we are saying tonight it is a 4-3 game heading into the sixth inning and their starting pitcher is out and you got to hold on for the final of this game, I don't know if they have 3 or 4 pitchers that you feel confident that can get you there to the end. Like, I think back to the last game that I was at. So last week I was at the Tuesday game against the Red Sox. I was at the Friday game against the Cardinals. It was the same formula in both of those games. They just don't have the bullpen to consistently hold on, I think.
Right, and that's why when you asked earlier about Seth Lugo, yes, Seth Lugo needs to lead Major League Baseball in innings pitched. He needs to end the season with one of the 10 best ERAs in Major League Baseball. It's strange to say, but that's how good he and Singer and Waka and Reagans have been, is that they, sure, with the help of Bobby and Salvi and Vinny, yes, they've put themselves in this spot to where they have an outside chance at the division. They currently hold that third wild card spot. Lugo tonight, Michael Lorenzen, Michael Waka tomorrow. That's why it's so imperative that they are not just good, but very good. You know, for as much as my expectation with these starters on a nightly basis is just give the team a chance to win. When you get down to the final 41 games and the postseason is within sight, man, you start to throw realistic expectations out the window. So now it's not, hey, Waka, Singer, Reagans, Lugo, give me a chance to win. It's, no, I need you to be the reason why we win tonight. You're right. No, outside of Lucas Ursig, there isn't anybody in that bullpen that has earned your confidence. Now, you can feel good about Sam Long and Chris Bubich. You can have high hopes for Bubich. Hunter Harvey, John Schreiber should be back hopefully soon. But no, Lucas Irsic's the only guy that when he comes into the game, man, I'm at peace. I certainly was in that game a couple of days ago when he closes it out for another multi-inning save. That was the first time in a very long time I've felt as if the ninth inning was set. Even though I loved what Scott Barlow meant to this organization, he was always more of a fireman to me. Lucas Irsic's the first let's-slam-the-door kind of closer we've had here since HDH departed when Herrera was ultimately traded in 2017.
Vern, I'll get you out of here with this question really quickly. I asked this last week. I haven't had a chance to ask you. If we're going meet-the-parent style, circle of trust, what bullpen relievers are you throwing in there? Obviously, Irsic is in that circle of trust right now. You mentioned the peace component of it. Who else are you putting in that circle of trust with Irsic?
Yeah, I don't think anybody belongs in the circle of trust. It's opportunities right now. The next opportunity for entrance, to me, should be Chris Bubich. And after that, yeah, John Schreiber, hope to have him back soon. He can get his way back into that circle of trust. But, yeah, right now it's Lucas Irsic and only Lucas Irsic.
That is our guy, Josh Vern. You're joining us on the show today, our Royals insider. Vern, this is your first appearance on 96.5 The Fan, man. This is a special day in my life and yours. Happy to have you on today.
Well, I hope I lived up to it, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. That's my guy, Josh Vern. You're joining us on the show today. Vern said something very interesting there at the end. Let's talk more about the Royals bullpen and how we all feel going into this weekend series. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.